If you like the Star Wars, well, you've come to the right place, because this is the Rantcore Pit, where myself, Jedi Cole, and my esteemed colleague, none other than Eddie Medina.
Hello, everybody. We are ready to travel the vastness of the unknown regions of the Star Wars space universe, as it were.
Or perhaps the known regions.
Yeah, known and unknown.
Known and unknown. In fact, we're going to do a little bit of traveling here. You know, summer is wrapping up for a lot of people in the States, and this is where we do realize that it's not yet summer in the Southern Hemisphere. But but for those of us here in the U.S., summer is about to wrap up, so we're kind of we'd like to get one last trip in before the whole thing goes away for us. And with that in mind, we'll go ahead and we're going to take a little trip around the known and unknown worlds of Star Wars, as it were.
Well, I say unknown because I'm a little bit into the New Jedi Order, and so they make reference to the unknown regions of the galaxy in the books. I guess that's where my confusion.
Like planets that aren't really there, or
yeah,
or what was it? Something like, or disappeared from the archive, as it were.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Like but, Camino, formerly known as El Camino.
Well, that's they. Well, you know, and that's what happens when you let the younglings into the holocron. You know, sometimes one of them gets a little spunky and hits the delete button, and there you go. All of a sudden, all the records of a planet are completely gone.
It's strikingly far easier than you'd imagine.
It is.
Very disappear.
Much so. That's why Ahsoka has been, you know, banned from ever going into the holocron again. That, and she kept calling the librarian Sky Guy, and, you know, we all...
Yeah.
Yeah, I had to get that in there. Sorry.
She kept asking, why do they call you Jocasta New when you're so old?
That's a good one. I like that. Wow.
So, yeah, there you go. But what we're going to do is we're going to kind of look at not all of the planets, but more specifically, we want to explore the reason for the title of this episode being a planetary singularity is the penchant that George Lucas had for having planets in his universe that just are pretty much a theme. Where everything, they're the dullest planets in the world because they don't change in topography or.
That's true.
They're completely, you know, if you go to the planet, you're pretty much stuck with whatever it's got on board.
Mm-hmm. That's true. So where should we begin our trip into the galaxy, as it were?
I think we should start literally where we all started. At least those of us watching the films chronologically,
mm-hmm.
Where it all effectively officially began, regardless of where you personally started your own Star Wars experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And that is Tatooine.
Oh, okay.
Also known as Dune. No, whoa, sorry.
oh,
not
God.
At all. No, not...
Wow.
Not at all. Muad'Dib! So.
I was going to say perfection from Tremors, but okay, we can go with Dune.
Okay. Well, I think technically perfection came after where Dune came well before.
Yeah, yeah.
Technically speaking.
Well, they do both have giant worm monsters living underground, so that's where the confusion comes in.
Oh, there you go. So I guess, you know, where Lucas failed to rip them off completely, Tremors came in and fixed up that imbalance. But yeah, I think, you know, it's like in Star Trek where any place you go to, like, visit any planet you go to pretty much has a universal world government because it's much easier to go and stop by any given planet and have to deal with just one bit of governance.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of having to, you know, jump all of the, you know, jump wholeheartedly into the middle of, like, oh, yes, we're visiting, you know, such and such planet, but we have to just visit this continent because we're dealing with this government. And, you know, in much the same way, one of your little shortcuts, as it were, cinematically, is to just make all of the stuff, you know, all of a planet pretty much the same.
Just the one government ruling over the whole planet?
Well, not the government, because, you know, in Star Wars, you pretty much have the one government ruling over everybody. Supposedly.
Oh, well, that's true. Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, it's in much the same way that a one-world government, which is largely patently impossible, is a handy shortcut for your storytelling. Having a one theme, you know, a one horse planet, as it were, a one theme planet, it just makes it a lot easier. You pretty much establish, okay, well, this, you're arriving on Tatooine, pretty much the whole planet's a barren wasteland. Why anybody bothers is beyond any comprehension.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're not meant to really think about these habitable planets logically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And when you get right down to it, you know, if you can breathe the air, you may as well just move in, no matter how bad. And so, you know, presumably a lot of the folks that are there are kind of stuck there.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So we'll start on Tatooine, because it is apparently the furthest from the bright center of the universe, if there is one.
Yeah, that's been well established.
Yeah, that itself is an important distinction.
How do they refer to it in Troops? The cops ripoff?
Oh, it was the ass end of the universe.
Oh, that's what it was.
But you got that small town feel. We know everybody, and I mean everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. These Troops is a great example.
Wait, just real quick, you know, like I said earlier, I am kind of into the New Jedi Order, and what was neat about the books, and the hardcovers would include on the inside cover a map of the galaxy, pretty much where all the planets were laid out. And it's interesting to look at. If anybody gets a chance, you can Google it. You know, just try like New Jedi Order map of the galaxy or something. And it shows.
I'll try that now.
Yeah. And it really kind of lays out the planets, and it shows where Coruscant is, right there dead center with the core worlds. And as you go further and further out, you know, you have Alderaan, you have a few other planets that you may be familiar with either from the movies or the books. But oddly enough, Tatooine is not the furthest planet out.
I think you're assuming there that Coruscant rests at the actual bright center of the universe.
Well, the way they have it laid out, it pretty much shows it as literally the center and everything else revolving around it. But
actually,
yeah,
that's a galaxy, not necessarily the universe. So.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm tired.
I'm going to be very technical here with you on this. So. That's just the way it's going to be.
But yeah, exactly.
But yeah, but Tatooine is supposed to be like literally way outside the core.
Yeah.
As
yeah.
it were.
Yeah.
And one of the least exciting tourism, not a big industry there.
Oh yeah.
Though it should be, because everybody seems to make their way to Tatooine. And I do mean everybody.
Yeah.
I mean literally, if you look at the major players in Star Wars, who hasn't dropped by?
That's true. I mean it shows up all the time, and not just in the movies, but again, when you go back to the comic book series, whether it's the Marvel series or the Dark Horse series, inevitably we always return to Tatooine at some point. It never fails.
Absolutely.
They must have a giant magnetic core that just kind of draws everybody back to it, whether they want to come back or not.
I think what's at work here is, you know, I've always and quite often applauded the Star Wars saga for having absolutely zero to do with Earth,
mm-hmm.
except in the hands of, like, fanboy fiction.
Yeah.
Where people who don't get it, you know, jump in the hairy middle of things. But, at the end of the day, there is no connection to Earth. It's not like every single ripoff, as we talked about on that show, you know, where no matter how far out in the galaxy, somebody's got something to do with Earth.
Yeah.
I mean, in Guardians of the Galaxy, it's forgivable. That's part of tying it into everything going on. Because in an Earth-based universe, you have to have that. But what really set Star Wars apart, in my opinion, is that fact. But that said, ultimately, Tatooine becomes the Earth of Star Wars. because all of a sudden everybody's got to, that becomes the center of everything. It may be the furthest point from the bright center of the universe, but it's certainly the center of their universe.
That's it, exactly.
Every single everybody goes there for no really good reason. It just, you know, and I think that's one of the things that, you know, there's plenty of things to bother you about the prequels, I'm sure, if you, you know, you care enough to be bothered about these things, but.
Oh, we don't, we're not bothered by the prequels at all.
Yes, no, we love them. But, you know, one of the things that makes that kind of trying there is the fact that, you know, why did we even have to involve, why did Anakin have to be on Tatooine? He could have been anywhere.
Yeah.
It's just too coincidental that, you know, his hidden away son goes right back where he came from.
Well, yeah, it's funny how Tatooine has already got enough to worry about on its own that they have to throw in whiny Anakin Skywalker into the mix, or Mannequin Skywalker, as we like to call them.
Mannequin. And I think, you know, if they wanted to, you know, I know that Watto paid good money for him and his mom, but I would have, even with his prowess with electronics and stuff, I'd still have sold him off.
Sorry about that.
And the dog agrees.
Yeah, sorry about that. He caught wind of a bantha or something outside, I think. But anyway, you were saying?
I know Watto paid good money for Anakin and his mom, but even with his prowess with electronics and stuff, I'd still have sold him off. Just, you know, you can put that money to better use. Get a droid or something.
That's horrible. Oh, man.
And beyond Tatooine, I think we're just going to kind of skip around and such. I'm not going to try to do this, you know, in order of appearance or anything like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, Tatooine does hold a vital role. So we'll talk about the fact that, okay, you've got this planet that's entirely desert. And, you know, back in the day, James Herbert was actually asked about his thoughts on, you know, Tatooine, but I think because it's not a major player, or at least wasn't back then, you know, it was sort of like, well, you know, that's a thing. It's not like he felt like he held the exclusive rights to having a planet that was entirely desert.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if there had been sandworms, hate them. Just like on Venus. You know, if there'd been sandworms and stuff like that, then that'd be a whole different story. But
yeah.
I'm sure if you dug around long enough, you could find somebody doing a planet full of sand.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. Oddly enough, nothing comes to mind as far as like another sand planet in the Star Wars universe. And of course, there are those out there who are much more, you know, well versed in the expanded universe novels, but I can't think of anything. So I guess Tatooine stands alone as far as, you know, having the monopoly on sand, you know, because it does get everywhere. You know,
that is so true. And if there was some, if you sand had any potential as a commodity, it would be a very rich planet.
Yeah.
Apparently, lava, hot lava, is a big commodity.
Explain that to me. Explain that.
Apparently, pumice is a big deal. A lot of dermabrasion going on in the Star Wars universe. A lot of grinding wheels, that sort of thing. So pumice is a huge industry.
Oh, is that it? Okay.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, if I had some lava, I could do a better job. So, yeah, they took that to heart, and
I never got that. I was like, what was the point of a lava planet?
Yeah, that was one of the more curious and very volatile planet. I mean, sure, if you've got the technology to build there so you can have a base of operations for your lava mining or lava panning, as it were, then great. But, you know, it's got to be a bear to build in lava.
Yeah, explain to me how these robots I'm sorry, droids. I forgot we're in the Star Wars.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, these droids.
You really are off your game.
I know. I really am. How they manage to stay so close to the lava and not melt. And if they have some sort of special metal that they build their little work area and their droids out of, why didn't Anakin have the foresight to just have like some sort of armor made out of the same metal?
Yeah.
That way, when he did, you know, take a nosedive.
You know, there is a cautionary element there that safety is always should always be your first priority.
Yeah, even if you're a Sith Lord.
That's right. and I think, you know, it's a that's a damn good question.
Answer that one, George.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. He doesn't have to anymore. It's not his baby.
That's true. That's true. But it's funny because I think you brought this up one time in one of our casual conversations where if you think about it, a lot of the elements are actually kind of represented by the planets in the Star Wars movies. I mean, Earth, I guess, could be represented by Tatooine. Wind,
absolutely.
Cloud City.
Yeah.
Fire, obviously, what we were just talking about.
So, which is appropriate since the thing got started in the 70s, and Earth, Wind, and Fire were at the height of the
powers. Exactly. There was a little bit of a tie in there, a little crossover that no one knew about.
That's right. In concert.
Every time Earth, Wind, and Fire sold an album, George Lucas got 10 cents.
Wow, I did not know that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a little known fact.
There are so many of them on this show.
Don't bother to check if they're true facts. Just take our word for it.
That's right. Exactly. It's best if you don't check these things out, except for that map that was mentioned earlier. Do check that out.
What is it about the Star Wars planets, though, that if you think about it, everything, whether it's Tatooine or Hoth or Dagobah, it's either a vastness of sand, a vastness of snow, or just a vastness of just bog, of just...
Yeah.
Swamp. You know, it's like, it's never, I mean, and I guess that's why you kind of have to give them a little bit of props for Naboo, because at least Naboo, you went from, you know, an established, you know, palace city area into this lush environment to an underwater world that was vastly different. So at least with Naboo, we kind of got a little bit of a, you know, something different.
There's some variety. You know, they had a lake country, apparently.
Yeah.
The entire planet had to share.
Yeah.
You know, most regions on any given continent might have a so-called lake country, but apparently Naboo just gets the one because it's a Star Wars planet.
That's true. But I mean, like with Hoth, again, it's just like, are we led to believe that the entire planet is nothing but ice and snow?
I think it's pretty much a frozen wasteland. It's sort of like the frigid opposite of Tatooine.
Mm-hmm.
And I think perhaps that's what they were looking for, really, was sort of to take an opposite extreme approach.
Yeah.
So
for a kid, you know, like I think I mentioned this on an earlier episode, that was kind of a big deal for me because we were used to, you know, Tatooine, and then, of course, Yavin, we saw this kind of jungle planet briefly. But then with Empire, we thought we were just going to get more of the same, but instead they went in the opposite direction and gave us an ice planet, which was pretty cool because it allowed for the characters to be presented in these, you know, really cool outfits, you know, these snow outfits, and it gave them different vehicles, you know, the snow speeder, as opposed to just having the X-Wing on a planet. You're led
exactly.
to believe that the snow speeder is specially built to handle those temperatures.
Yeah, like they had to go out of their way to make existing speeders
mm-hmm.
workable.
Yeah.
And and what's interesting there is also you, the Hoth and also Tatooine
mm-hmm.
bring an interesting thing into the mix in that they're all not only habitable, and like I was saying, you know, if you can breathe the air, you may as well stay, but it also, there was this great suggestion that not only were they habitable, but they were already inhabited. They at least were biospheres.
Yeah.
So all of these planets already had something living there
mm-hmm.
and that they could sustain life, that life could develop on these worlds that were just completely inhospitable. people. And that was a neat little kind of background concept.
Yeah.
Because you don't really think about it, the richness of these worlds is they also had sort of built-in wildlife.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So, the wampas and tauntauns were already there when they got there, and so it was kind of handy. Because they quickly domesticated the tauntaun.
Yeah.
Which, it would be like going to the Galapagos, I guess, if we were much smaller than, say, marine iguanas or something, and you get a species that's never encountered man, and all of a sudden you're forcing it to let you ride around on its back with a saddle and bridle and kit.
Yeah.
And they took to it pretty well. So unless they had, like, you know, the... I shudder to say this because I hate the term, but the Tauntaun Whisperer.
Oh, you beat me to it. I was about to... Nice. Tauntaun Whisperer. It was kind of like the same on Kamino. The first thing we see in Kamino are they're riding these underwater creatures that, spring up out of the ocean. And,
absolutely. And the Awar.
Yeah, whatever they're called. And so that's kind of the same thing. You assume that when they went to this planet, they inhabited it and they built their little cloning station, and inevitably they had to have some sort of, what are they called again?
Awar is effectively short for air whale.
Oh, okay. They had to have air whale wranglers to, go diving and figure out a way to, to domesticate these things.
Yeah, and then they came under fire on Kamino, literally not terribly long after events in episode 2, because there was a really telling documentary that just blew the lid off the AY.
And what was that documentary called?
Greyfish. Because of the giant gray AWAs.
I knew that. Oh, gosh.
Yeah. And, Kamino, that's why the clones went away, is the stocks dropped. And,
That's why they had to work for Darth Sidious, because no one else was going to hire them because of their bad rep. They had to take the money where it was coming from. Oh, my gosh. That's horrible. Greyfish.
Not to be confused with the documentary Crayfish, which was about the Cajun crawdaddy harvesting industry.
Yeah, exactly. Also an interesting
documentary. Yeah, it did nothing to harm their sales at all. In fact, if anything, it just made people hungry. Yeah, that was one of the neat things is no matter where you go, you find a lot of these great little background things going on, a lot of creatures and stuff, even on these inhospitable worlds. And then you go to one particular planet, which is the only themed planet that didn't start out that way.
Okay.
And I'm going to let that set in for people to be like, there's going to be about half of you guys who are saying, oh, and then you'd be like, Eddie, he's a little dazed right now.
Just a little bit.
Yeah, just a little. Trying to work out what I'm talking about here. And, of course, I'm talking about Coruscant.
I figured that's what you were going with, but I didn't want to look stupid for, like, the fifth time in this episode. So I was keeping my mouth shut.
Yeah, originally it was just a planet of little mom-and-pop shops. And, a lot of little boutiques and stuff, and then the Empire moved in and decided to make it their headquarters, and it just turned into the galaxy's biggest Walmart. Lots of parking.
Yeah. You kind of get the impression that the lower levels, it kind of started out that way, where you kind of imagine the lower levels were at one point the place to be, like the cream of the crop. But as they built upward with the newer levels and upward, obviously – those lower levels just became, abandoned or inhabited by, lesser, whatever. And
oh, yeah, absolutely. I always kind of imagined that, the more money you had, the closer to the upper atmosphere you might.
Yeah, exactly.
Might actually be allowed to live in or, all the important stuff's going on upstairs.
Mm-hmm.
And, Yeah, I literally imagine that if you go down into the lower levels, it becomes more like a slum, and you know, all the people that are forgotten are down there, and occasionally you have to deal with, like, you know, somebody drops a tin can or something upstairs, it may be hitting terminal velocity by the time it gets down to your neighborhood. You know, this might knock big old chug holes in the street or tear through your speeder.
Yeah. And again,
that's literally where, you know, overbuilding. They didn't want to, like, move the capital or anything, because somebody discovered this one planet that was, like, dead center of the universe, and I think it was also one of the only planets with a multiple biospheres.
Oh yeah.
So it was actually, it had deserts, it had frozen wastelands, it had all kinds of different environments, and they just paved the hell right over all that. But because they didn't want to have to find a new capital, and there's only one center to the galaxy, to their particular galaxy, they were forced to just keep building up and up and up. And, you know, where a lot of modern cities are literally built on the ruins of the ancient cities, they didn't really wait around for ruins. It's still pretty active down there.
Exactly. Well, apparently when you look at the star chart, Coruscant, you know, it's obviously one of the core worlds. One of the other core worlds that they mention is Duro, which I would imagine is where the Duros aliens come from. Those would be like the ones that are...
Oh, yeah. The
blue aliens with the red eyes, like Cad Bane.
In the cantina.
Yeah.
Yeah, or the guys in the cantina in the original Star Wars, yeah.
So, I'd like to know a little bit about Duro. I don't know much myself about it. It's not touched on very much in the books from what I've read.
Yeah, but and a little bit of EU I do know about that particular planet, or at least its inhabitants, suggests that they were... somebody had kind of brilliantly suggested maybe they have a... they're the most prolific... you know, they're the furthest... ranging of the species that go out into the universe. And I thought that was a clever kind of take, because they do have kind of the look of the classic UFO alien.
Yeah, exactly. That's right.
Which is the closest anyone's come to trying to, you know, pry our Earth into the mix.
I don't know, the Cantina Band. They're a little bit more like the Greys, I think. But yeah, the Duros aliens are too, in a way. But I kind of wonder, since Coruscant is so active and it's so, you know, with its, you know, skyscrapers and it being just basically one big city planet, I wonder if Duro is just like the redheaded stepchild of the core world. If their Coruscant has all the places that everyone wants to be, you know, all the big names, then Duro is probably like, well, you know, no one wants to go there. It's kind of like on a Monopoly board. It's that those first two, you know,
oh, yeah. It's kind of like
instead of being Boardwalk and Park Place, it's those first two purple ones that no one ever wants to buy because they're not worth anything.
Yeah, I think you know, Coruscant certainly is the most overbuilt, and perhaps that's why, you know, zoning on Tatooine, you only get a few cities here and there. They try to keep that to a minimum whenever possible. But, you know, the thing about it is you do some of the other worlds, like, you know, Kamino. Kamino is kind of interesting because what little expanded universe I've been exposed to is largely the old Marvel comics.
Yeah.
And they actually, Luke gets stranded for a while, and Han and Chewie come rescue him on a completely water-covered world.
I remember that. Yeah.
I did a little checking, and at one point in the actual comic, an unnamed water world.
Ah. So perhaps...
And I actually had it in my mind. Yeah. I had it in my mind that that one of the issues was titled Water World, which I thought would be kind of ironic. But it was actually titled Doom World.
Yeah, I remember that now.
Doom World.
That was a pretty interesting storyline. I actually liked that one a lot. That was the one with the aliens with kind of like the big bug eyes, and they when they would come out of the water, they would have to wear the suits with basically a fish tank over their head to make sure they could still be.
They didn't have. No, I think you may be talking about the ones where they did later go to another water world many years later with these orange skinned bug eyed.
Yes, those are the ones I'm thinking
guys,
of. Okay.
Yeah, this was the one where they had like some scuba guys with sea dragons.
Then they had the
II captain kind of pirate guys.
Oh gosh, I do remember their ship.
Yeah, it was just about that bad.
Let's not. Yeah.
And that was an interesting thing, though, because they didn't really. That was one of the only times for some writer of the Star Wars saga, the comic saga, really embraced the whole concept of, you know, the themed world where you had a planet that was pretty much all one thing and none of everything else. But some of the other worlds that did come to mind, we touched on Mustafar and Coruscant. Endor was another where you have an entire themed planet, as it were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where everything's pretty much, you know, it's all forest all the time. And apparently where lava is a big commodity, lumber is not.
Exactly, because there's no deforestation going on there, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, they're nobody's really cutting down much. The Ewoks have a bigger footprint as far as the lumber industry than anybody else. I mean, granted, the Empire cleared some land, quite a bit of it, for their operation.
Uh-huh.
But at the same time, they did leave a lot of good, lush, you know, they wanted, I think it was going to be like a weekend home after they got a few more Death Stars built.
Yeah, Palpatine's weekend home.
Yeah, it could just be like a little place to go out, you know, you'd have kind of one of those lounge chairs made of redwood and maybe a deck.
Uh-huh.
And perhaps you'd just go on a stroll and collect some pine cones and just relax, you know. Unwind.
Oh, is that it?
Yeah, that's exactly how it's a...
Collect pine cones.
You would believe the number of pine cones in the Imperial Palace.
Well, those are actually a big thing, you know, because that way when Life Day comes around, they can make the little decorative, you know, creatures out of their pine cones.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. You know, like little pine cone rancors with.
Yeah.
Pipe cleaners.
But yeah, pipe cleaners and googly eyes. And then
googly eyes. That's right. So, I'm going to go out here and say anyone who can make a first person to send us a picture of a pipe cleaner rancor. pine cone rancor, we'll shoot you a prize of some kind.
Something cool.
So write to jcumail@yahoo.com and send us your picture of a pinecone rancor. First one in gets a prize, as does our favorite, if God forbid we get one.
I really hope we get more than one entry. That
I do too.
Awesome.
That would be awesome. I would love to see a lot of entries on that. But, you know, Endor is like all wood all the time. Nice hardwoods, good old growth forests, mainly because there's the real bitch there is if there's ever a forest fire. Because there's the potential the entire planet could just go up like a tinderbox.
Well, it seems to be doing okay. I mean, all the biker scouts that keep running into trees, you know, and exploding, you know, nothing's burned down yet. So
it could be like the rare asbestos tree. Largely impervious to flame. Thank you.
Oh, wow. it's like one of those trick candles on the cake where it lights up right at first.
Oh, and yeah.
It just extinguishes.
And you just keep lighting it. You just have to throw a steady stream of biker scouts at it in hopes of eventually getting it to light.
Yeah, between biker scouts exploding left and right and then Luke setting Vader on fire, no one was really worried about a forest fire breaking out on that planet.
I'm just wondering, you know, with the asbestos trees, did they have to import the wood in for that pyre?
Yeah. Possibly. Oh, wow.
Or maybe it was just a bunch of Duraflame logs. You know,
No. In the Star Wars universe, it's Duros Flame.
Oh, Duros Flame. That's right. That's because that's one of the big commodities on Duro.
That's our one big commodity is Duros Flame Logs.
That's right. Okay. Somebody needs to do up a...
That could be something you could do for...
That'd be like Star
Wars. Alcon.
Star Wars. Exactly. Oh, that'd be perfect. Yeah, the Star Wars product lines.
Uh-huh.
And then, of course, there's Bespin.
Yeah.
Which apparently, when you're not, you know, collecting lava, then gas, apparently natural gases are a big thing.
Yeah, apparently so. And Lando's big on that. I mean, he went from doing the Bespin bit, and if I'm not mistaken, in Heir to the Empire, he went to some other planet and was strip mining that planet. And if I'm not mistaken still, I think in New Jedi Order, he jumps to yet another planet that he's strip mining. So it's like, Lando was...
I guess, you know, mining and prospecting just gets in your blood.
Yeah, I guess so.
And then, you know, before you know it, you know, you started out as a gambler scoundrel type, and then the next thing you know, he complains a lot about it, you know, all the labor difficulties and all that. But really, at the end of the day, he loved his job.
He knows he's on something good, so he's only complaining on the surface to dissuade everybody else.
Yeah,
because you know, muscling
it's either
in on
that
his
that or dressing up as a monster and scaring people away.
Like Scooby-Doo.
Exactly.
Yeah, Lando, if you think about it, he's kind of like the Borg. He goes from one planet, you know, takes all its strip mines or takes all its goodies and then moves on to another planet. Just keeps going and going. Or he's like those aliens in Independence Day. You know,
exactly. Yeah, he just wipes out the planet.
And moves on. Yeah.
All for profit.
Yeah. Well, let's get back on track here, I guess.
But that's a big, somewhere down under all those clouds is probably some sort of core planet.
Yeah.
But, what type of planet it is, who knows.
Gassy one.
It is gassy,
and we'll leave it at that.
Yeah, I think that's good. The mind boggles with the number of jokes that could be said right then. But but you know what's interesting though is you know we talk about these a lot of these being like the these various themed planets. But one of the other really interesting things with the Star Wars approach to these. To the various themed worlds is that a great many of the things we're calling planets are actually moons of planets.
That's true.
And that's a fascinating thing to me is the concept of rather than having them go to a planet, they're going to habitable moons of planets.
That's true. It's the moon of Endor. Isn't it?
Exactly.
And we're so used to saying Endor.
It's a moon of Hoth.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that's right.
Rebel base at
Yavin.
At Yavin was a jungle moon of Yavin.
Yeah.
No. Tatooine had the distinction of being a proper planet, but so many of the worlds of Star Wars that you kind of forget the fact that they were meant to be moons. And that's, you know, to me is another really cool, very unique thing about the Star Wars universe is that very often it was moons that you're visiting, not the proper planets themselves.
That's true. Interesting. So is Kashyyyk, though. Kashyyyk would be its own planet.
Kashyyyk was a planet, yeah.
Okay.
And Kashyyyk was kind of like Endor in a way because Endor had started out as Kashyyyk.
Yeah. Well, Kashyyyk is kind of interesting in it, you know, as for a kid, you know, imagining stuff, you know, when you find out the little bit you know about Kashyyyk, I think it was, I want to say, and I know it, we try not to invoke the holiday special, but one cool thing that I remember coming from that was a storybook about Chewbacca's family, and if I'm not mistaken, and of course it's been years and years and years since I've read it, but I believe this, as the story goes, is Chewbacca's son somehow makes his way down to the surface of Kashyyyk, and when you go down there, that's where you realize that there's all these like ridiculously deadly creatures, and if I'm not mistaken, deadly plants and everything else. So.
Oh, so it's a little wonder everybody lives upstairs.
Exactly, and that's the whole point, and that's when you realize that the Wookiees are just playing it smart, so they're building their village up high where it's safer, or these creatures, you know, who can't climb trees and all, where they can't get to them. So, you know, it's kind of an interesting setup that they have there, you know, because here is Kashyyyk as presented in this nice, lush, you know, greenery surrounding these, you know, well-built huts that that the Wookiees live in, yet down below there's like all these terrors just waiting to like devour the Wookiees. But anyways,
kind of like everybody who hung out at on Endor and all the awful TV shows.
Oh, that's true. You know, in a way, Kashyyyk is kind of like Coruscant, where all the more preferred real estate.
Oh, I see.
Is up so, high.
So all the poison stuff is just, that's the slums of Kashyyyk.
Yeah. There you go. The retail is much better up high.
That's right.
I mean, the real estate.
No, but also the retail. Because you can get little mini aquariums and handmade rugs.
Uh-huh. Our Carney sets up shop up high. So
that's,
you know,
right. Yeah. The sole human who bothered to check it out, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Because apparently, you know, the Wookiees themselves are just not into commerce.
Mm, yeah.
So they had to get someone else to come in, get the humans to come in and do the shopkeeping.
Yeah, exactly.
Or maybe he just came with the Empire, you know, maybe sort of like following their movements and, you know, providing services that the Empire needs, like mini aquariums and rugs. I can't see... I don't think he's really necessarily needing either of those commodities.
I don't think I want to know how he services the Empire. We'll just leave that one alone, too.
Well, there's many ways one can do their part for the Emperor. He's one of the lucky ones, we'll say.
There's a public service announcement that I don't want to know about.
You never know what the Empire will ask of you, so just be ready for anything.
Here's a thought. Are there any, because I know you're kind of somewhat of a fan of the Clone Wars, the shorts, the animated shorts. And I know they kind of touched a few planets in that series. Like, I think I remember the Kit Fisto one where they kind of showed an underwater world. Do you remember much about that?
I think there was one where they go to Mon Calamari.
That's what I was thinking, too.
The Mon Calamari homeworld where the Mon Calamari and the Quarren.
Okay. Yeah, that's it.
All reside. And, yeah, there's that, I think, was a water world, too, or at least largely waterborne.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so everybody had the very the sort of beach community themed costuming, sort of things when you might, you know, when you're vacationing at the coast, especially in the southern part of the states.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You might see these kind of themes going on. I thought it was particularly curious that the one of the Quarren was wearing a shirt that was a Don John Surf Shop. I thought that was.
Oh, okay.
Called. Yeah.
That it. Well, there is that.
It's very out of place.
Well, the paparazzi did snap a picture of Admiral Akbar wearing his Panama Jack shirt that one time. So, yeah, you may be right about that. Yeah, and his OP sunglasses.
The very special Mon Calamari model.
Yeah.
A very wide bridge on the nose portion there. Eyes are a bit far apart.
Oh, man. Any other worlds that we haven't desecrated in this episode?
I'm trying to recall, because I feel like I'm missing something, because I often sort of gloss over the episode one worlds. Mm-hmm. Naboo is a good point, because it's rather unique in that it has that sort of liquid center, as it were.
Liquid center, like it's a Whitman chocolate or something.
Yeah. Well, you know, when Obi-Wan and when they take the bongo, the sub, they're actually, apparently, to save time, they're cutting, rather than traveling through, you know, surface level waterways,
yeah,
they're apparently traveling through the core of the planet. They're literally cutting across, you know, subterranean, kind of,
waterways. Like, yeah, pathways, yeah. Waterways. Well, would make sense as they go deeper. The aquatic life keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger, because the deeper they're going, you know,
yeah,
like
they're
just getting
more space to accommodate.
Yeah, well, that's interesting.
Yeah, that was another one of those things where, you know, it's kind of a unique take on the idea of, you know, being underwater, because they were literally underwater and underground at the same time, mm-hmm. as it were.
Yeah, that's true.
And again, you have this whole biosphere, you have this whole ecosystem going on down there,
mm-hmm.
where apparently there's always a bigger fish.
yeah. Now, We kind of just sort of touched on Dagobah, but not really. Do you want to talk about Dagobah for a bit?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, Dagobah is another good example, because,
yeah.
That's a very much a themed planet, heavily themed planet.
Mm-hmm. But it's interesting, because what I think Jedi Jansen kind of spoke a little bit to it on the live show.
And if you're not familiar, that would be Jansen, yeah, from the Rancor Pit Live, who makes us look like we know what we're doing there.
Exactly, which is a task in itself.
Indeed.
But didn't he mention about, you know, the cave there on Dagobah, about how it was almost like a dark side kind of vortex, or kind of like a dark side hangout? Do you remember him talking about that?
Yeah, I think he was talking about some of the, like, expanded universe history. It was either suggested or specifically covered in the – because I was kind of speculating on the cave.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, that's interesting that Dagobah, that Yoda would think to go there. I mean, and yeah. Like we kind of said earlier in an earlier episode, it's almost like he's hiding in plain sight. Because if the Emperor knows that Dagobah is kind of like has this little vortex of the dark side, then that's what
yeah.
better
place. Who would go there? Yeah.
Exactly. What Jedi Master would go there?
Exactly.
So then it makes it the perfect place for Yoda to just kind of, you know, hang out and do his own thing and, you know, wait for unsuspecting pilots to crash so he can steal their intergalactic wieners or intergalactic Chico sticks.
That's right, yeah, the intergalactic Chico stick. And then apparently he has no fondness for peanut butter, because he's just spitting that right up.
Oh, here's something real quick. I'm sorry, do you have anything else you wanted to touch on for Dagobah?
Again, I think what I like about Dagobah is it's another one of those planets that was sort of, even though there's no cities or technology,
yeah,
it was, you know, very much a pre-existing environment where it was just chock full of life, just no advanced forms of life until Yoda arrives and sets up shop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, one planet that I've always been curious about is the planet Gamorre, which the Gamorrean guards come from.
The home of the Gamorrean guards?
Yeah. Because I always wondered, you know, what is Gamorre exactly? Is it just basically like a big mud planet where the Gamorreans just kind of wallow in and kind of roll around? And
it could well be, but I think that's being a bit unfair to them. Just because they resemble pigs doesn't mean they live like pigs.
I would like to think that's what it is, just one big mud planet. They like going with themes and all. But apparently I did do a little bit of research into Gamorre, and not a whole lot, but from what I gather, they almost treat it like they would the Klingon homeworld, where the Gamorreans are more like the Klingons, where they're like clans of warriors. And if anybody who knows, maybe is a little bit more steeped in the expanding universe, if you know a little bit about the Gamorreans and Gamorre, and if there is actually like some sort of like Klingon type, you know, background there, you know, just, you know, maybe drop us a line on Facebook or an email and correct us if we're wrong.
Exactly, yeah.
Maybe give us a little bit more history on the Gamorreans.
Give us a little background there.
Yeah, before not gathered, it was kind of like the way the Klingon Empire is portrayed in the Star Trek universe. They kind of tried to take the same take with the Gamorreans in the Star Wars universe.
Absolutely.
So, it's not exactly a big mud pen after all, much to my disappointment, but, you know.
I know that's terrible. They may have like a, you know, mud wrestling is probably a big thing there, though.
Uh-huh. I do know it's on the Outer Rim. I do remember that part, though. Out there, it's out there with Tatooine and Kessel.
And oh, cool. Okay.
Actually, now that I'm looking at the star chart here, it's not too far away from Hutt Space. So it kind of maybe...
Yeah, it makes a little sense that you'd be employing a lot of Gamorreans.
Uh-huh. Yeah, they're... Huh. Interesting. But,
okay.
Now, one thing I did want to touch on, since we are talking about the planets, is I wanted to talk about the fact that, not that a lot of people like to talk about the death of Chewbacca, but it literally took a planet to kill Chewbacca because he's that cool. He's that tough. But yeah,
and yet again, it was a moon, not a planet.
It was a moon. But he was on the planet of Cernpedal, I think is how you say it. It's part of the new setup. Yeah.
You bet.
But obviously how the story goes, you know, in the New Jedi Order book is Han and Chewie and Anakin, not older Anakin, but younger Anakin, are there, and they're trying to evacuate the planet, you know, as many people as they can, and inevitably Chewbacca stays behind to try to buy Han and Anakin time to leave the planet, in which, of course, he does. And the moon is Dobito, I think. And, of course, I could be saying it wrong again. But, yeah, again, Dobito crashes into the planet and thusly, you know, killing Chewbacca. But it took
probably anyone else in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
I think we need to take a moment to really consider the lives that were lost that weren't Chewbacca.
Oh, well, yeah, but, you know, in the grand scheme of things, Chewbacca is all that
only
matters.
One that matters. Yes, I understand.
Well, anyway. Well, we're not taking any moments of silence for all the Alderaan, you know, lives.
Oh, yeah, there's a planet we know little about.
There we go.
Outside of the EU, it's we got to sort of see the planetary view.
Uh-huh.
And next thing I know, it's pretty well gone.
So, yeah, we don't know much about Alderaan, but I do know it's part of the core worlds. So yeah. I wonder if it was kind of, you know, hotsy-totsy, as it were. I mean, I guess it would be. Because,
well, yeah, they were pretty well represented, I think, in the Senate.
That's true, yeah. Bail Organa. So no, we do, don't we? We do see it briefly in the prequels, in episode.
Oh, that's true. I guess. Yeah, I guess you did get to see some of the cityscapes when Bail Organa gets home with his, because you know he and his wife have often talked about adopting a baby girl.
Oh yeah. But at least that's his
most,
side of the story.
Yeah, in one of the most.
Her side of the story is that she sent him out to go pick up, you know, something for dinner. He comes back with a kid, and she's like, "What? No. Take it back."
Yeah, really. why can't we, you know, we are capable of having our own kids if we never stay home long enough.
Exactly. So I guess for the little brief glimpse we've got of Alderaan, you can kind of assume that it's kind of going in the same way of Coruscant, where it's like more of like a city planet, you know, with a lot of commerce and skyscrapers and what all.
Well, you know, the thing about it is I'm racking my brain to really recall how it looked. Because, I think you were in, like, one of the major cities because he just sort of shows up. His wife's out on the balcony. You're like, oh, look, honey, look what I brought. have fun raising this kid. I'll see you later.
Yeah, exactly.
No wonder Leia's memories of her mom are always looking sad all the time. She was, prepared to have a career. there was a reason she didn't have kids yet. And, then all of a sudden her husband shows up. He's a senator. It's not like he's home all the time. At least, I guess that was one good thing about the Empire coming along.
Mm-hmm.
But, some of the stuff that I've seen in imagery of Alderaan suggested at least some of the conceptually what they were wanting to do is there were some, like, expanded universe things where literally the planet was deliberately, kind of trying to have a synergy with the environment itself.
Oh, okay.
So it suggested a lot of things like, building around natural outcroppings and things like that, or building into the stonework and being as minimally intrusive into the local landscape as possible.
Oh, okay.
And also, I believe Alderaan was where you were first supposed to be seeing those air whales.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, that was part of, it actually was part of what those were designed for originally, because the concept of those things goes way back.
Oh.
And like so many things, like the Cloud City was supposed to be in the very first Star Wars film.
Okay.
I can't remember on what planet, but it wasn't called Bespin at the time, but there was supposed to be like a city in the clouds, and it just wasn't viable on their budget or anything, so it kind of got written out.
Well, I that doesn't surprise me, because Lucas kind of did the same thing with the Indiana Jones movies. It's like he had so much written for Raiders of the Lost Ark that originally Raiders was supposed to have the mine car chase, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh,
it was supposed
okay.
to be in Raiders, and of course they couldn't budget it in, or they couldn't work it into the script, so he wrote that out. He wrote out something else that ended up in Temple of Doom. I can't remember exactly what it was, but both those scenes inevitably ended up in Temple of Doom. So
exactly.
It doesn't surprise me that he did the same thing with the Star Wars movies.
Yeah, a lot of stuff just kind of got jettisoned and re-examined later on, or would later become a part of the greater universe. This interesting stuff, what does and doesn't happen. Like Mustafar was actually already there as well, or a lava world, because for Empire, Vader was supposed to be headquartered mm-hmm. on a lava world.
Mm.
Like, literally, I remember reading somewhere, I can't back this up that much, but there was something I'd read that there was apparently a scene written for Empire where like Vader was supposed to be at his castle or whatever it was on this lava planet. Yeah, it was supposed to have like a castle there, kind of like a knight would,
Okay.
And very sullenly feeding these little gargoyles out on the grounds as if they were, so many pigeons.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of like moping around or something.
When you said castle on this planet, I immediately pictured the Cobra Castle in the old G.I. Joe cartoon.
Oh, well, you would, of course.
Oh, yeah. It's like this. Where would they build this big castle with this giant cobra on the outside, and like, oh, hello, this must be where Cobra is hiding out. But anyway.
Funny that.
Yeah. I can, oh my gosh, so Vader feeding gargoyles.
That's a
visual.
Yeah, I know. I can often visualize that. It just, you know, almost if the mask could actually affect a frown.
Oh my god!
Yeah, the whole idea of a lava planet had been around since about Empire, anyway. So there are always these little subtle things that got recalled and became part of this. And I feel like I'm almost certainly missing some other planet somewhere in the actual cinematic universe. But you know, Tatooine just became such a central point. That's all I keep coming back to.
Yeah. Uh huh. No, I mean I can't think of anything we didn't cover. I mean,
in there we got pretty much everybody else in there.
Dance Wing only gets mentioned.
And
like you said, Yavin, the moon of Yavin was Yavin 4. Now that I think about it,
yeah.
So Yavin was the big red planet then.
Yes, exactly. Yavin was a gas giant that apparently nobody was bothering to mine. It was just different kind of gas.
Oh, is that what it is? Yavin was another gas planet?
Yeah, it was supposed to be a gas gas giant.
Okay, gas giant.
And apparently its moon is a giant jungle planet.
No, I think we pretty much covered all of our bases, as it were.
And as you look back on all these planets, and of course you begin to see that there are all of these, those handy themes that just make it a lot easier to address each of these worlds, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of odd because I think the. You can allow a presupposition that, you know, if you go to this planet and the area of the planet where you're going is jungle or desert or whatever, does your audience necessarily need to, are they going to be left thinking the entire planet is that way? Is it really necessary that the entire planet be that way?
Mm-hmm.
Or are we sophisticated enough to imagine that, you know, it would be like if you came to Earth, which thankfully they don't. And, you know, visit a particular region that you would encounter all or most of these types of, if you land in the desert, it's pretty much going to be desert everywhere you look. But you could, you know, move to a different part of the planet and perhaps find something entirely different, like jungles or swamps or what have you. And, That's one of those things where I think it becomes sort of thematic. It becomes a very Star Wars thing to have themed planets or planets where everything's pretty much the same.
Yeah.
Everywhere you go.
Mm-hmm.
And how unique that is to Star Wars, I'm not sure, because I don't know of any other science fiction I've seen where they really went out of their way to point out how lacking in diversity a particular planet is as far as having any types of environments.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So in a way that, it's perfect for this show because it is a very Star Wars specific kind of thing.
Yeah. It's a very George Lucas kind of thing.
Yes, very, very Lucas-y it is.
And with that, I guess we can close it out.
Yeah, we better stop. It's a Lucas-y kind of thing to go ahead and end it right now. Actually, it's probably not a Lucas-y kind of thing to end it now. Otherwise, a lot of things would have been ended before we're allowed to get too far.
Yeah.
But this has been a really good exploration of the various worlds of Star Wars, the primarily themed but not entirely themed.
Mm-hmm.
We've managed to travel around a bit, get one last little vacation trip, and
yeah.
So it's back to school, kids.
All you younglings.
All you younglings, yes. Back to the academy, younglings.
Yes, yes.
Over, Summer is.
Disappointing the fact that you now know that Gamorreans don't wallow in a giant mud planet, so.
I probably really ruined the idea for tens of people who shared your vision
of people. Well, I'm sorry. I always imagined that. I always imagined there would be this one special Gamorrean that would look up, you know, in the little barn door and see this little spider, and the little spider would, wow, you know, periodically write messages to this Gamorrean, you know, like, you are special. And he would name that spider Charlotte. But, you know.
That's beautiful.
I should do that mashup sometime.
I think you should. Yeah, you should have the Gamorrean guard there in Jabba's palace in one of the archways. You have the...
with the little spider in the web saying "shoot first."
Wow, very important thing to. Very important thing to bear in mind whenever dealing with Jabba's enemies, especially.
Yeah, exactly.
And if you do shoot first, shoot straight, because you've seen what could have happened had that whole expanded universe thing not complete waste of time.
Yeah.
And with that, I will say, Eddie, tell us a little bit about what you're up to.
Oh, goodness. Right now, we're just... My world consists mostly of podcasting right now. Obviously, the Rancor Pit is a part of my life on a weekly basis between this pre-recorded show that you're listening to here on JediCole.com. You can also catch us on the other weeks, every other week, on DeepBellamOnAir.com, where we do the live show. If you happen to miss the live show at 11 o'clock Central, it will be archived there at DeepBellamOnAir on our Rancor Pit live page.
Absolutely.
Aside from that, yeah, and we also link it here at JediCole.com. We're calling our trying our best to get some episodes of Figments under our belt before we start releasing those. That way we kind of get ahead of the game, but we're looking forward to Figments making its triumphal return to the JediCole universe. So
excellent. We're looking forward to seeing that come back.
Yeah, we actually have a couple episodes already done, and we want to get another one or two done before we start releasing them. That way they can start coming about back on a regular basis. So think of it as a bit of a break, and we'll be back with Figments Season 2.
Oh, very nice. So Figments will be returning very shortly to the Jedi Cole universe. Of course, you're coming to you from JediCole.com. You can write to us and send us your pictures of Pinecone Rancors, or Rancors for that matter, to jcumail@yahoo.com. You can follow us on Twitter at the Jedi Cole U, and you can occasionally find Eddie and myself at various Dallas area conventions, and at the upcoming as this goes live in just a very few days, I do want to give a shout out to a really cool thing that's coming up from a friend of ours over at Deep Ellum on Air, Jedi Goddess Christy. Jedi Goddess Presents, along with Art Love Magic in Dallas, in a galaxy far, far away, a gallery show. Mm-hmm. Plus, it is literally like a gallery show that's very Star Wars, but also science fiction, gaming, all kinds of fandom-themed aspects. That begins on Wednesday, August 20th, and runs straight through August 30th at the Jeanette Kennedy Gallery on Lamar, I believe it is.
I believe it's at Southside on Lamar.
Yes, 1409 South Lamar in Dallas, Texas. You can find more information here and over at Convention Awareness Project Texas at conventionawarenesstx.blogspot.com, where I also provide a year-long listing of every convention in the state of Texas. The day we recorded this show, I actually had to add another show to the listing. This is probably about the 40th time I've had to add this year. So there is always something going on. In fact, we're going into September. I think there are 14 or 15 conventions in Texas. Interest. But do, if you can, if you're in the Dallas area, do check out In a Galaxy Far, Far Away. Eddie and I have been invited to join Christy for a panel at the closing reception. Mm-hmm. And I imagine one or both of us may be showing up there periodically. And I do believe...
Yeah, I actually have two pieces in the show. I'm glad you brought up the show because...
Absolutely, yes.
Part of the reason why I'm so scatterbrained on tonight's episode is because I'm feverishly trying to finish my second piece by tomorrow's deadline. So
he's actually busily working on it while we were recording.
That is actually not a lie. My first one is a Princess Leia piece. The second one, I'm going to keep a little bit more secretive because it's a newer piece. The Princess Leia one is one that people have already seen at other shows. But I'm going to keep the second one a secret and reveal it on the 20th at the show.
Excellent.
And also, just real quick, if anybody has the guts to do a Pinecone Rancor, I think, Cole, it's safe to say we promise to show a picture of it.
Yes, you know, if you can get it in before the 30th, we will definitely be showing off your Rancor, your Pinecone Rancor at the Art Left Magic event during our panel.
Yeah, and hopefully we can also show it off on the live show since it is a visual thing.
Oh, that's so true. We can. And in fact, if you check out a week from today at Deep Ellum on Air, our next live show on the 24th, mm-hmm. Rancor Pit Live, we'll have a very special guest. We'll have a lot of fun surprises. Uh-huh. And if possible, we'll be showing off someone's Pinecone Rancor.
Let's hope so.
I know, depending on where you are in the country, getting your hands on a pinecone right now might be a little difficult, but...
Send us your best interpretation of what a pinecone rancor would be. If you
That's
can
right.
find something, even if it's not a pinecone, send us something.
Yeah, if you find something in nature that you can change into a rancor.
Yeah.
We would love to see that. Again, you know, the first one to arrive gets a prize guaranteed. If we get more than one, we may even further expand that and have some special prizes.
Any pictures
for our favorites.
Yeah, any pictures you send us of your creation, we will do our best to show it on the live show.
Absolutely. And indeed, anything you send us that is age appropriate, we would love to show off on the live show.
Uh-huh. Just send us those pictures.
Absolutely. And with that, I will bid everyone adieu, and we will be back in 2 weeks with more Simple Tricks and Nonsense. Okay.
All right.
Well, I will see if I can get this cut. I need to get Christy's thing cut as well.